Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, this is Dr. Budweiser, and I'm coming to you directly from the Wiser Living headquarters, and I would like to welcome you, each and every one of you, to this broadcast, and I know you're taking your time out to tune in, and I know it's valuable, so I'm greatly appreciative of your time and for you taking your time out to participate in this program today. So over the next 29 minutes, I want to add to your wellness experience as well as mine. First of all, please go to Wiser Living, Wiser Living, W-E-I-S-E-R, living.com. And on that initial page, you will see on the right-hand side where you can get a Skype consultation. You can also click on Wiser Living TV, that link, and watch all of the YouTube videos we've uploaded. By subscribing, you'll not only get access to these educational videos, but you will also be informed when a new video is uploaded. You can also get access to our archive radio programs at Wiser Living Radio, and you can check out the menu bar that lists all of the articles, all the programs and services, the Wiser Living seminars, recipes, products, and so forth and so on. So please take a look at that at your convenience. And once again, check out Wiser Living, W-E-I-S-E-R, living.com. Subscribe at Wiser Living TV. Follow us at Wiser Living Radio. Like us at facebook.com/Wiser Living. And you can also connect with us at Google+, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. Okay. Wow. Let me get started here. Let me see what I want to do here. Here we go. ADHD. ADHD and ADD. What's the subject? Does it really exist? I know everybody's like, wow, there were some people that emailed me and texted and all this. Says, does it really exist? Does it? Well, if it doesn't, then what's going on with the millions of people, the kids and adults, who are diagnosed with it? And if it does, are there better ways to address it other than with medication? You know, there was a research done on the subject of innate temperaments. Innate temperaments. In psychology, temperament refers to those aspects of an individual's personality, such as a person being an introvert or an extrovert. This is kind of interesting to me. I guess that's why I kind of like read a lot of this. And, you know, these two personality traits are regarded as innate or originating in the mind as opposed to being learned. This research was done by a Dr. Kagan, with a K, who studied developmental psychology at Harvard University his entire professional career. And a ranking of the 100 most eminent psychologists of the 20th century published by a group of U.S. academics back in 2002 put Dr. Kagan in position number 22. He was in the 22nd place, and he was above Carl Jung, J-U-N-G, I think that's what Jung, how you said. And Carl Jung was in 23rd place, and Carl Jung was the founder of analytical psychology, and he was put above Ivan Pavlov, who was listed in 24th place. And as you know, Ivan Pavlov discovered the reflex that bears his name. You know, a lot of you know it as Pavlov's dog, right? Well, he was above these two individuals. And, you know, that's nobody to sneeze at. Dr. Kagan spent decades observing how babies and small children grow. And, you know, he's measuring them. He tested their reactions. And later, once they had learned to speak, questioning them over and over again. And for him, the major questions were, how does personality emerge? What traits are we born with, and which ones develop over time? What determines whether someone will be happy or mentally ill over the course of his or her life? Well, in his research, he determined that how we are shaped in our early childhood is not as irreversible as has long been assumed. Matter of fact, if you're placed in a favorable environment, that can dictate how normal you develop. So you're not stuck with what you get by 2 years old or 3 years old. He also found that as early as 4 months of age, some 20% of all babies already have skittish reactions to new situations, objects, new objects, and to people. He called these babies high reactive. These babies tend to develop into anxious children and anxious adults. 40% of babies, or what he called the low reactives, behave in the opposite manner. These babies are relaxed, they're easy to care for, and they're curious. They are curious. And later in life, they are not so easily ruffled or disturbed. So mental health issues have skyrocketed in the past 50-plus years. And objectively speaking, adolescents have more opportunities than they did 50 years ago. But they're still anxious and they're still frustrated. So the number of diagnosed cases of attention deficit disorders or even depression has increased dramatically. So if you go back to the 1960s, in the 1960s, mental disorders were virtually unknown among children. Today, official sources claim that one child in eight, at least here in the United States, is mentally ill. And one of the reasons that was stated is due to fuzzy diagnostic practices, of all things. So let's go back 50 years. We have a child who's 7 years of age. This child is bored in school and is disrupting the classroom. Back then, this child was called lazy. Today, this child is said to suffer from ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, or syndrome. I think it should be syndrome because we don't know. That's why the numbers have dramatically increased. Experts say that approximately 5.4 million American children display the typical symptoms of ADHD. How does this happen? Well, every child who is not doing well in school is sent to see a pediatrician. First they're sent to the school's nurse's office and then to the pediatrician. The pediatrician says it's ADHD. Here's a prescription for Ritalin, even though they're not Ritalin deficient. In fact, 90% of those 5.4 million kids, they don't have an abnormal dopamine metabolism, and basically dopamine is a precursor or a forerunner chemical in your brain that makes you feel happy and do happy things. So they don't even have a deficiency there, which would lead, if they had a deficiency there, it would lead to a hyperactivity. But they don't have that problem. So if you were to interview children and adolescents, say age 12 to 19, you would find that 40% can be categorized as anxious or depressed. But if you take a closer look and ask how many of them are seriously impaired by this, you'll find that only 8%, not 40%, but only 8% are mentally challenged with anxiety or depression and may need medication. Operative word, may. So when it comes to boredom, at what point did it become a mental disorder? Think about it for a moment. ADHD has become an epidemic in the United States. Some reports say around 9 to 19% of Americans are diagnosed with ADHD. If you venture outside of the U.S. to say like France, you'll find that it's the complete opposite. Only 0.5%. I had to look it up, several times. Was it 5%? No, it's 0.5% of individuals are diagnosed with ADHD. So the question begs here, why is there such a wide disparity from country to country? In France, there are cultural differences compared to the U.S. Generally, the French are not in favor of the consumption of chemically processed foods like we do here in America. And this is especially true for children in school who are often, they often eat meals that are prepared by chefs in training using ingredients from local produce and livestock. With all of the high fructose corn syrup and GMO foods and stimulants and allergens and food colorings and preservatives in our children's diets, it's no wonder why they can't focus. It's no wonder why they can't stay calm. Plus, we must all remember their children. That should not be, that should not even have to define it. They are children. They are active. You know, children naturally tend to be active and energetic, not just active. They have some, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, you know, we played very hard. Then mom said, come in, it's time to eat. We come in, we ate, and guess what? The food was a stimulant. We wanted to go play even more and harder. So why weren't we diagnosed with ADHD? And I think this is which is why, you know, it's why constraining a kid to an assigned seat after they've had soda, candy, sugared cereal, chocolate milk, some of these fruit juices, come on, that's going to provoke misbehavior. So when you really think about it, do school children have a deficit in attention, or do they have a deficit in nutrition, which leads to misfiring in the brain because they don't have the necessary building blocks for the brain to function appropriately to certain stimuli? Here in America, we give the kid a prescription for this out-of-control behavior. Contrarily, in France, the preferred treatment for ADHD is socializing and talk therapy rather than harmful chemicals that come with numerous side effects and create addiction. I mean, the side effects from ADHD medications are often far worse than the condition itself. I mean, these drugs are actually they actually rival illegal street drugs in terms of their dangerous risk to health, which basically includes permanent brain damage, heart toxicity, liver damage, cancer, changes in personality, depression, and or hallucinations. You know, heart attack and stroke or sudden death and even suicide. This can be attributed to other ailments. That's why I never trace back to the medication. You know, in children, the long-term effects of drugs are typically largely unknown. And in the short term, these drugs are leading to potentially deadly medical emergencies. But you don't hear that. You don't hear a lot about that. You got to go dig and read and read and read to find this out. According to data released by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, ADHD drugs such as Ritalin or Vyvanse or Strattera or and Adderall, as well as their generic equivalents, were responsible for nearly 23,000 emergency room visits in 2011. These are hardcore Class 2 narcotics that are regulated by the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, as a controlled substance, which can lead to dependence, all the way down to little kids on this stuff. And the majority of kids diagnosed with ADHD will be prescribed these potentially dangerous drugs, and the most common being Ritalin. And by definition, Ritalin stimulates your central nervous system and may certainly interfere with the delicate and complex workings of your brain and your personality. You know, some of the side effects include sudden death in people who have heart problems or heart defects like a murmur, stroke and heart attack, increased blood pressure, and then you get a blood pressure medication, and then it's going to deplete certain nutrients. It's going to give you more side effects. They have new or worse behavior and thought problems, a new or worse bipolar illness, new or worse aggressive behavior or hostility, new psychotic symptoms such as hearing voices, believing things that are not true or suspicious, seizures, you know, new manic symptoms, increased heart rate, you know, slowing of growth, at least in boys, slowing of growth like heightened weight and eyesight changes or blurred vision. Diagnosing ADHD really comes down to a matter of opinion, believe it or not, because there are no physical tests. And that's why the question is, does it really exist? There are no physical tests like a brain scan that can actually pinpoint of this condition. I mean, this diagnosis is presently dependent on the subjective, operative word here, subjective evaluation and observation by parents, teachers, healthcare providers and the child. And once a diagnosis is given, it's considered a lifelong condition. Just like most of the other medications people get for diabetes, for high blood pressure, it's like you get on these and they never take you off. You know, Dr. Jerome Groopman, G-R-O-O-P-M-A-N, Groopman, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, said, and I quote, "There's a tremendous push where if the kids' behaviors start to be, quote, unquote, abnormal, if they're not sitting quietly at their desk, that's pathological instead of just childhood," end quote. So you see, only children who struggle with inattention and hyperactive or impulsive behaviors around the clock, 24/7, are deemed to have ADHD, or at least they should be. And that's not a lot of people. Forget kids. If you added adults in there too, there's not a lot of people that have experience in this round the clock. Now, behavioral problems clearly do exist, and they do appear to be more prevalent in the last 4 or 5 decades, with or without the ADHD label. The question on everybody's mind, or should be on everybody's mind, is what's causing it. Well, the cause of ADHD, like many other disorders or diseases, is unknown. But there are many enemies out there that are clearly related to this disorder, including, you might want to jot this down, poor nutrition, environmental toxins, ranging from vaccine additives all the way to agricultural chemicals. And as I mentioned earlier, behavioral therapy is a preferable treatment to the side effects of drug therapy. But even that may not address the basic nutrition issue, which I believe is the key factor. So we already know that the food choices of most children and adults, and for adults that are listening today, are incredibly poor, and which means that it is very difficult to expect a child, like I said before, to have normal behavior if they are fed refined grains, if they're fed refined sugars, and they're eating processed food loaded with chemicals. And basically, this food is devoid of any natural nutrients. If your child or your grandchild struggles with behavioral difficulties, whether they have been diagnosed with ADHD or not, I strongly recommend addressing seven things. Number one, too much sugar. High sugar content and starchy carbohydrates lead to excessive insulin release, which can lead to falling blood sugar levels or hypoglycemia. Hypoglycemia, in turn, causes your brain to secrete glutamate in levels that can cause agitation, depression, anger, anxiety, and panic attacks. So adults usually, you know, latch on if they have these issues, panic attacks, if they're working, anxiety, you know, depression. And then they're agitated too, so it's not really an age thing. You could be a grown-up or a child. And besides that, sugar promotes chronic inflammation in your body. And many studies have demonstrated that the connection between a high-sugar diet and worsened mental health is linked together. So high sugar leads to brain issues. You're not focused. You have foggy thinking. So think about that for a moment. Number two, and you hear a lot about this, gluten sensitivity. You know, the evidence suggesting that gluten sensitivity may be at the root of a number of neurological and psychiatric conditions, including ADHD. You know, it's basically, to me, it's like it's quite compelling. You know, according to a 2011 study, celiac disease is markedly overrepresented among patients presenting with ADHD, and a gluten-free diet has been shown to significantly improve behavior in kids. Now, the study went so far as to suggest celiac disease should be added to the ADHD symptom checklist. So gluten sensitivity. Number three, too few beneficial gastrointestinal bacteria, or GIPRO for short. As explained by Dr. Natasha McBride, she's a medical doctor with a postgraduate degree in neurology, and she says basically toxicity in your gut can flow throughout your body and into your brain, where it can cause symptoms of autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia. Dyspraxia is a condition where a person who has problems with movement, coordination, judgment, processing, memory, and basic cognitive skills. And depression, schizophrenia, and other mental disorders. So if you're you know, so go to colon. I say this a lot for you guys have been on this program, listening to this program. Basically, I say so go to colon, so go you. So go your gut, so go you. So go your intestines, so go you. So reducing gut inflammation is imperative when addressing mental health issues. So optimizing your child's gut flora is a critical step, and for you grown-ups as well, especially you grown-ups. So think gastrointestinal probiotics or GI Pro and fermented foods like sauerkraut, any kind of fermented vegetable. I mean, it's imperative that you get these in each and every day. And some of you say, well, wow, I don't like taking pills. You know, I forget to take pills, but you don't forget to drink your coffee. Think about it. You're not forgetting. It's not a priority. You got to do whatever it takes. Put something on your refrigerator door. Put a magnet there. And look, and to remind you, in the bathroom, on your window, on your mirror, to remind you to take your supplementation, to eat correctly, you know, fermented foods. I mean, to get your gut ecology where it needs to be in order for you not to have these issues. Number four, omega-3 deficiency. You know, research has shown that kids low on omega-3 fats are significantly more likely to be hyperactive, struggle with learning disorders, and display behavioral problems. Wow. All from the fat. Omega-3 deficiencies have also been basically tied to dyslexia, violence, and depression. Number five, food additives and GMO ingredients. A number of food additives are thought to worsen ADHD, and many have already been banned in Europe or the EU. Some potential enemies to avoid include, you're going to have to go on your pantry on this one, and your refrigerator. Go there first before you go to the store, because you can see a lot of it in the store. But here are some enemies that you want to avoid. BLU-1. And BLU-2. BLU-1 and BLU-2 are food colorings. One that you don't see much of is green number 3. And you don't see a lot of this. Orange B. B as in baby. Orange B. Another, coloring. Red number 3. Red number 40. Yellow number 5. And yellow number 6. These are, you would think they're kind of rare, but they're in everything. All you have to do is start reading some labels. And sodium benzoate, which is a preservative. You want to stay away from these, you know, whether you have ADHD or not. But basically, especially if you have been diagnosed with ADHD, or you are acting like, you know, you haven't been labeled ADHD, but you act like that. You know, recent research also shows that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide, which is used in large quantities on genetically engineered Roundup-ready crops, limits your body's ability to detoxify foreign chemicals and compounds. As a result, the damaging effects of these chemicals and environmental toxins are magnified and may result in a wide variety of diseases, including brain disorders that can affect behavior. Number six, and this is probably one that you definitely probably don't want to hear, but I'm going to say it anyway, is EMF. Limit your exposure to radio frequency microwave radiation, cell and portable phone, and electro pollution. This is especially true. Because, you know, I'm not going to take your cell phone, you know, away from me, obviously, because you think I'm crazy then. Or, your microwave, which you really shouldn't have, especially if you're going to use the thing. Don't stand there and look at it and go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, and then you open it up. Don't do that, because all microwaves leak. So, yeah, I want you to limit your exposure, because this is especially true for the sleeping environment, you know, where you go to bed, where you rest, where rest and repair occurs. It should be your sleeping area should be as electrically neutral as possible. So it's, you know, don't go to bed with your cell phone next to your head or in the bed with you or even on the nightstand. Disconnect from it. Turn it off. And put it on the floor. Number 7, avoid toxic exposures, which, it's going to be pretty tough. You know, you should avoid all known toxins like MSG, which you can, and artificial sweeteners, which you can, including aspartame, mercury from silver amalgam fillings, fluoride in the water, which might be a little difficult because when you're brushing your teeth and also fluoride in your toothpaste. And others that you can think of, you know, the reason why I say that, because there's like 75,000 toxins out there. You're not going to even be able to pronounce a lot of them, let alone remember it. So here's something that you can do. Keep you should be able to keep your detoxification centers from, not keep them from, but actually keep them functioning well is probably a major key. This is something you can do. And when I talk about detoxification centers already in your body, I'm talking about your skin, your liver, your lungs, your lymphatic system, your kidneys, your bloodstream, and your intestines. I already talked about so go the colon, so go you. And that's eating right, supplementation, exercise, and a couple of other things. I know I said 7 things, but here's another one. Here's number 8. Spend more time in nature. Spend more time in nature. Researchers found that exposing ADHD children to nature was an affordable and healthy way to control the symptoms. They need to plan. Additional supplementation that you can take are plant matrix or phytomatrix vitamin and mineral supplements, because you need, especially with this condition, B vitamins like B6 and B12, zinc, usually low in zinc, and magnesium. So rather than go get these all separate, get them in a plant matrix vitamin and mineral. And I say plant matrix, not synthetic, so make sure it's plant matrix, phytomatrix vitamin. And essential oils, believe it or not, like cedarwood essential oil and vetiver, V-E-T-I-V-E-R, vetiver oil. The reason I mention this is because a study in the Journal of American Medical Association, JAMA, found that vetiver oil had a 100% effective rating on treating ADHD and cedarwood oil an 83% effective rating. Basically, you take 2 drops of the vetiver oil and 2 drops of the cedarwood oil and just rub them on a child's neck or your neck and then upward around your temple area. And if you need to dilute it, you can add some coconut oil. You know, rub that on the area, and then it will help improve focus. Some other oils you can use to treat ADHD include lavender oil, peppermint oil, rosemary oil, frankincense oil, ylang-ylang, Y-L-A-N-G, ylang-ylang oil. And finally, you should understand that different children have different ways of learning. You know, most children or adults with ADHD are kinesthetic learners. That means they are hands-on learners. So know that if you try to put them in a classroom and tell them to sit there and not move for a school day, that really isn't natural for them to do. So looking for a school system or teachers that really understand kinesthetic learning, that are patient, and that can be hands-on, is one of the best ways of learning and supporting children with ADHD. And I've ran out of time. So I hope you got a lot out of this. Please, later on in the week, I'll have this as a blog that you can go ahead and read it. And, check us out at wiserliving.com. And remember, let your food be your medicine, and let your medicine be your food. This is Dr. Budweiser, and we will see you next time.